tempted in every way. Got you caught on the other side. Some things you just can't hide. Feel the poison of changing me. All that I'll ever be comes.
And welcome to another Behind the Panels one-shot special. I'm Richard Gray. In this special, I chat with Australian writer and artist Justin Randall, creator of the Gestalt graphic novel series Changing Ways. Justin is also the artist on licenses such as Silent Hill and 30 Days and Night, Evan and Stella. He's appearing at the Oz Comic Con in Melbourne this week. In the interview, we chat with Justin about his artistic process, how we got a start in the industry, also his upcoming works and a few scoops around Changing Ways Book 3 and Changing Ways Book 4. You can find more of Justin's work at justinrandall.com. You can also go to changingwaysbook.com, and you can find more information about Oz Comic Con at ozcomiccon.com. We hope you enjoy this special. Justin Randall, welcome to Behind the Panels. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, cheers. Nice to meet you.
Great to meet you too, and we've had quite a few Australian writers and artists on recently, and one of the things I always like to find out to start off with is how you got your start in the comics industry, because you've worked in the US industry as well.
Yeah, that was kind of where I got my first break as well. I didn't start getting involved with comics until my mid-30s, I think. And I'm 41 now, so I'm a full-time lecturer for Curtin University, and one of my students that came through the course was Ben Templesmith. Mm. So he actually got me inspired to get involved with comics. It's quite a funny story. He likes to tell people that I was his tutor, and I like to tell people that I didn't teach him anything because he was already doing wonderful work anyway. way back then, he was just this little kid trying to get his way into the industry, and he was a huge influence for me. I became friends with him when he was a student, and after that, and it just inspired me to start getting into comics. I'd always enjoyed storytelling. I used to write a great deal, but I used to always think that the idea of redrawing the same thing over and over again would be boring. But as soon as I started getting into the whole narrative and story building, world building, there was no stopping it now. It's just something I love.
Yeah. So in those early days when you were looking at the sort of things, the sort of storytelling that inspired you, was there particular influences that you had when you first got into writing comics?
Mainly entirely film, almost entirely film. Mm. My comic book influences would be probably Sam Keith and the Max was the main influence. Like, my experience with comics was that they were just for little kids. That's all I knew. I knew the spotty faced little nerdy kid with braces. They're the people that read comics, right? And comics are all just about superheroes and spandex, and that's it. And I didn't know much more. So the first comics I used to read were like Wizard and Chips and all these really weird cheap, like a pulp British little comic strips. That's all I used to read. But when I saw the Max, that was it. And then for storytelling, it was films. You know, films like American Wolf in London or Angel Heart or No Vacancy. Anything that tested the human spirit just really blew me away. It's the sort of thing that I really get a kick out of telling stories about. You know, you get a human being, throw them into a crazy situation, and just see if they can come out the other end, and remind human beings that everyone's capable of doing the worst things given the right circumstances, and also capable of doing the most beautiful things. And that fascinates the heck out of me.
Yeah, well, some of those early stories that you wrote that were published anyway, that some of your first published comics were things like In 24/7 and Character Sketches and Flinch. Yes. I guess one of the things that really fascinates us is how you actually go about getting something published. I mean, obviously Gestalt's been a big driving influence here in Australia, but how did you go about getting those first works out there?
Well, my motivation was just to tell the story. So I wasn't really knocking on any doors. I wasn't networking with anybody, but I did hear about Gestalt. They were just starting up in Perth, and I just started working on Changing Ways, but I was really trying to stabilize a technique. I'd been playing around with the technique for about 2 or 3 years, really trying to, it was quite frustrating. I was trying to stabilize something that would make me identifiable, And it started to happen with changing ways. So I, what did I do? I had a meeting, actually, even before that, let's go back even further. As I first started working on changing ways, I sent an email to Steve Niles in the States, who was, of course, the writer for 30 Days of Night and a bunch of other horror titles. Because I just loved his writing. So he was the only person, he was the first person I'd ever made a contact, made an attempt to reach out and touch. Well, contact. So I dropped him a letter, and it was a pretty foolish letter because I said, or email, I said, "Hi, Steve, your work's fantastic. I'd really like to work with you someday. I'll even do it for free." And I sent him some samples of Changing Ways. Now, thankfully, I think he forgot about the free part, because about 6 months later, I actually got an email back saying, "Do you want to work on the next 30 Days of Night book in conjunction with the film release?" And of course, I was elated. I thought this was fantastic. The way that came about wasn't just convenience and them liking the samples I'd shown them. It was also because I'd previously had the advantage of knowing Ben, who, of course, was strongly connected to the franchise because he was the co-creator of 30 Days of Night. So he put a good word in for me. I'd also been chatting with a lady called Kelly Sue DeConnick, who Temple Smith had put a word in for me as well. She had a book she was trying to get off the ground, and I was helping her with that. And the style that I had just wasn't suiting her book, but it did suit 30 Days of Night. So they offered me the gig, and I jumped at it. The funny thing was, it wasn't until halfway through 30 Days of Night, even in Stella, which was a full graphic novel, Steve Niles contacted me about halfway through, and he went, "Is this your first comic?" You know, and I said, "Yeah, it is." And he was like, "Oh, cool, no problem." Like, I think he was very happy with the work, but he was quite shocked that I hadn't had any major publications prior to that, apart from a few, you know, small pieces here and there.
It was actually Kelly Sue is actually a friend of panels in a lot of ways. We had her on the show a couple of months ago, I should say.
No, she's lovely. She's lovely.
And
absolutely.
She was fantastic to work with. And I guess from your, she would have been starting out writing around those times as well. She would have had a few things under her belt. But I guess working from Australia as well. And working with those two writers who have now since gone on, I mean, I suppose Steve Niles was already quite a big name at that stage. What was the process like? I mean, when you were turning the work in, I know I often hear of people having to say, "I have to write or draw as though nobody's watching." was there a sense that you were sort of entering a world that was going to be harshly judged by thousands of fans around the world?
That's never crossed my mind. I've never thought about it. I was so elated and excited to work on... Look, there's only two franchises I ever really wanted to work on.
Yeah.
When I decided the end of comics, I said, "Look, I want to work on 30 Days of Night, and within 5 years, I want to do something with Silent Hill." And that's it.
Yeah.
So I didn't really give it much thought about what people were thinking. I just wanted to give it the best I could. I mean, I remember in the early pages, I would contact Kelly Sue, or I'd contact Steve Niles, and I'd go, "Look, I've gone through the pacing of this page, and it would be awesome if we could just squeeze one more panel in here for this. And is it okay if I do my own hand-drawn sound effects for something over here? Because I think it would really work." And they were great. They were really accommodating. And I think they recognized that I was throwing all my passion into it, which is, you know, what we all like to do when it's a subject that we enjoy.
I mean, you already talked about the fact that you were working on Changing Ways at this stage as well, which was obviously your passion project. And I should say up front that I am a massive fan of Changing Ways. I absolutely love it.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, that's a great deal.
Well, it's one of those things. I mean, they're the sorts of stories, and your cinema influences, now that you've said that, I can really see that coming through. Because I'm very much a fan of that genre of cinema as well. But one of the things that you mentioned, how long you've been working on this for, and I've seen how long these things take, but how long did that first volume of Changing Ways take from initial concept through to the time, you know, Gestalt put it out?
Oh, that's a great story. I mean, it back in the early 90s, so it would have been, I guess, after I had Temple Smith as a student, and I thought, okay, I'm going to do a comic. It was very naive of me, but I thought, I don't care. I'm going to give this everything I can. I'm going to make a graphic novel. I'm going to come up with some crazy story. So I pinned up bunch of work from different artists that inspired me and writers and films and things. And I just got to work. And of course, I started with writing the story because it doesn't matter how pretty your pictures are. If the story sucks, it's a waste of time. Mm. So I started with one thought. It was based on a picture by Dave McCain that I'd seen once, and it had a hand grabbing a light bulb with moths. And I don't know, I just like the idea of moths around a light bulb, you know, trying to attain something foolishly. It's like the human race always trying to strive to do the right thing, but 100 years later we look back and shake our head and go, what are you bunch of idiots doing, you know? That mentality of misguided good intention is something that I that kind of reminded me of this moth bouncing against the light bulb. So that's why that was one of the opening scenes. And then it just, I tried a technique called discovery writing, where I had a kind of loose idea, and then I just wrote it. I did a lot of liaising with friends. I've got a friend who's an up-and-coming writer called Troy Church. Keep an eye for that guy's name. He's going to be good. And I remember in the early days running stories back and forth with him, you know, a couple of little angles here and stuff. And I pretty much put a mixed bag of things I like. Like I went, I really like it when pigs eat people. That's a real fun scene. I had one of those. And so I ran through a whole bunch of stuff and then went, okay, how can this story actually work? So the discovery writing process allowed me to come up with some really weird stuff. But then it was a matter of, okay, let's nail this down. Let's make it. Is there anything in human history that I can build this from? So I started looking at World War One, World War Two, and transitions of human society when the things they know, the things they rely on, you know, sort of start disappearing and or fading, or you go from being, and this is really relevant for today, you go from being the really popular, important person to someone who no one wants to go near. Mm-hmm. And that's what I wanted to do in Changing Ways. You know, no one was safe. No one could be, you know, immune to these brandings, but human beings are reactionary. Just because you've got a branding on your body doesn't turn you into a bad guy, but we brand people as being bad because they're different. And so it was a nice way of reflecting on how humans act and pretend that we're trying to protect each other, but in doing so, we screw around with civil liberties. And so I brought into things like the National Defence Authorization Act, which is something that was put through. I actually had this in my story, but I just didn't have a name for it. So when the National Defence Authorization Act, which is a disgusting act, was passed, the bill was passed in the States, it suits really well with my story. Actually, no one knows that part of the story yet, so there's a spoiler for
Is that for part three?
It's actually an ongoing thing from book one, but it gets a name. I like to make people disappear and give it a name.
One other thing, I mean, I love the art style, and it reminds me of, I mean, instantly I could see that there was some photographic influence in there, and then I went back and read a little bit more about your process, and I found out that you're taking something like 13 hours per page.
I should wrap up that last part, actually, because what happened after the early 90s of working on those, on Changing Ways, I was taking about a day to do one panel.
Mm.
Like, it would take me 8-9 hours to do one panel. And I was naive about it, the process of printing. Like, so I'd print samples out and I'd go, well, all the detail I just did, you can't even see it. What am I doing? So I did 20 pages of Changing Ways like that. I pitched it to Gestalt when they appeared. I then got the call for 30 Days of Night. And then Changing Ways went on hold. Mm. 30 Days of Night, I knocked that one out. And when I came back to Changing Ways, my technique had changed. My technique had become tighter, it became more slick. So that was around 2007. So I actually went back and redid most of the artwork for the first 20 pages of 30 Days of Changing Ways. Wow. To re-suit my style. So, yeah, it took a while for the first book to come out. Then it was about a two-year gap for the second one. And a lot of this has got to do, of course, because I work full-time as an academic as well. So it makes me tricky. And I just had my first baby boy with another little girl on the way. So,
oh, congratulations.
Yeah. Cheers. I keep pretty busy.
Yeah, well, I mean,
and I forgot, did you have a question back there? I missed it.
Oh, yeah, I was just saying, just on that process, just on that 13 hours, and I was reading about how you go from, you know, initial concept through to finished page, and I was wondering if you could just explain to our listeners why, you know, how, what that 13-hour process is like, what that, how you come about from your initial kind of idea and the photograph through to the finished product.
Yeah, Yeah, okay. I'll make this fairly brief. I'm actually recording my steps at the moment for a textbook. And
oh, wow.
I think I've got about 45 minutes of just dialogue explaining the steps without going into detail. It's crazy.
Oh, we've got time.
So here's the expedited version. Story first, absolute. So I'll write my script like a film. So I'll imagine the entire story like a movie first. With zero limitation on my ability. Like, if I'm scared of drawing a plane, it's irrelevant. If a plane got to be in that story, then I've got to put a plane in there. So I write up the script. I'll then go through the script when it's in its final version, and I'll start sketching the actual page layouts as thumbnails on the actual script. Really, really, really loose, you know, just to give me a sense of pacing, composition, making sure the reveal's working. Now, here's the tricky part. This is really cool. When you work on a thumbnail at a small scale, your eyes are... The reason we do thumbnails is because our brain can see composition better. We're not distracted by too much detail. We can see negative and positive space, spatial hierarchy, navigation for the juxtaposed frames. It's much easier to read all that data at a small scale, and it's much easier to get that composition right when you're sketching nice and small because you're not being distracted by those details. So I'll take that little sketch that I've drawn, I'll then enlarge it, blow it right up in Photoshop, like stretch it right out. It'd be all low res and gross, but it doesn't matter. It's just there to sit in the background. I'll then start building the frames, and then I'll print that out. I'll add all the text in there, add all the voice bubbles or narration or whatever, and then I'll go off and do a photo shoot. So that little quick sketch gives me all the compositional angles I need, and they're usually pretty ugly sketch, but I can read them. Then I'll do the shoot, and then the beauty of being the writer as well as the artist is if I feel that the person I photographed is pushing the expression in a better way, I can tweak the script a little bit. We can go into the next stage if you want. It's a bit convoluted, but it's...
No, please. I'm really interested.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'll try and go through it as simple as possible. So I'll go out and do a photo shoot, and most of the people that I photograph are never in the same room. If you see someone in a room with a bunch of other people, chances are they were never there. Those people never met. So when I take the photographs, I'll take hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of photographs. I've also started the new technique where I use a GoPro now. With the GoPro at the high frame rate, I can actually video someone and pause the frames to get the perfect facial expression. Because what I really don't like is when... there's a lot of people who use a photographic technique, and as long as they're using their own photographs, I've got no problem with it. But sometimes people photograph too stiffly. People look too artificial. It's gross. It just looks too theatrical and staged. So I take a lot of photographs to try and get the right moment. I'll then sit down in front of the computer and I'll very loosely montage all these photos together. I'll put people in positions. And the reason for this is because of my own weaknesses, my own inabilities. I'm not very good at sketching something quickly proportionally. I'm not very good at perspective. But once you give me the template, once I've managed to photograph my scene and I put it together, my strengths are the bells and whistles, are the little details, you know, the way the water runs down, the piping and glistens that, you know, as it hits the bounces back. And that's the stuff I really love doing, I really enjoy. I mean, it was like when I used to skate as a kid, right? I used to skate parks, I'd do wall rides, I'd skate huge half pipes, but I couldn't ollie at all. I could, but my ollies were terrible, you know. So for some, I find difficult what a lot of people find easy. But I respect photography as just as much of an art form, and I create my comics as if I'm thinking they're a movie. So I'm a little bit all over the shop. So anyway, the montage gets done. I then start digitally sketching over that montage to add all the extra detail. Let's say a character needs different hair or different clothing. The photos are just the starting point. They're just a template. So I'll redraw the entire scene in pencil with a very, very fine 0.35 clutch mechanical pencil. These were being discontinued, so I had a contact at the Winsor & Newton factory, and I got them to buy me about six boxes of them. So I've got four lifetimes worth of 0.35 clutch pencils to draw with. So let's say we've got a comic page, we've got all the photographs, I've digitally drawn over that again to add more detail. I'll then print that out on an A3 printer, put that on a light table, and then redraw the entire thing now with these 0.35 clutch pencils on the light table, adding extra details, anything I want. Once that's done, because it's on paper, paper's quite thin, you know, it doesn't take to paints very well. So I'll then scan that A3 sheet of pencil work. I'll bump the contrast up in Photoshop so it now looks like ink. So I've gone from drawing something with an extremely fine pencil and being able to rub it out with an eraser to scanning it and having it now look like ink work, which is very advantageous because I like to have an eraser. You like to have an undo button when you don't have a computer. Once that's done, I'll then reprint it out again on a heavy 200 GSM Perl stock, and I'll paint that paper. The beauty of this is that the pencil work or the line work cannot bleed, it will not move. And I paint with, I usually get, say, three shot glasses, you know, drinking shot glasses.
Yep.
And I'll fill each one with half a glass of water, and then I'm experimenting with different black inks at the moment, but I'll do like 2, 4, and 6 droplets in each container half a shot glass of water, and that'll be my painting range. Just to paint it black and white, so I'll have really, really light mid-tone and then sort of some dark colours. So now we've got a painted page. That painted page is then dried, probably painted 3 or 4 times, you know, getting different tones and details. It's then scanned, brought into Photoshop, and then it gets really complicated. That's when the 45 minutes of steps. In short, I pull back some photography, but it's usually just around the nose, eyes, and mouth, just because I hate drawing noses, they're annoying. And then the rest of it's all rendering. Lots of light. I work a lot in black and white to get all my highlights, all my shadows, all my... I do my matte painting. I'll bring in textures. You know, if there's a set of curtains there, I'll photograph some real curtains, or I might go to... the one place I do source imagery for free commercial use is cgtextures.com, just to get textures. And they're a fantastic website. So Wolfgang, for example, loves... here's a bit of gossip. He loves leopard print for some reason. Not that there's anything wrong with it. So you'll notice at the beginning of book two, the two girls are sitting in a room chatting and the curtains behind them are leopard print. That's a little homage for Wolfgang. And it's a pattern taken from cgtextures.com, which is an awesome website for getting little textures like that. So then it's lots of lighting, lots of shadows, and I will spend happily a lot of time on this stage because that's what I enjoy. I like playing with the lighting and just making the mood just right. And lastly, every page has to have at least one hero, meaning there has to be a hero panel. I have to have one panel that makes me go, oh, yeah, or the whole page has to be. So something like that.
And so you've got that coming out as a, did you say there's a textbook you're working on? Is that a video?
Yeah, there's a textbook I've been trying to put together through Curtin University as part of my PhD. So the idea with this would be it would not only explore like a chapter on everything I do in extreme detail, so you can have the simple version or the very, very high-end version, but it'll also cover what I teach on a day-to-day basis at university, which is structural narrative building and storytelling and how important these things are in our day-to-day. You know, without a good story, your comic, your movie, your book, it's a waste of time. You have to have good narrative, good structural narrative. And so it'll cover the sort of things that I teach at university. And then we make it probably a recommended textbook for students, I would assume.
Yes, I know the process well after that. I work at a university over in this side of the country. I was going to say, the other thing with Changing Ways, I mean, apart from the fact that it has gone on and it's won awards and the Aurealis Award, for example, it's now being translated into French,
yes.
I understand it. And do you see a lot of parallels between the Australian comic book industry and the European industry?
I see getting this in French, how do I compare it? It's like, my understanding, and I don't know this, but what I've been told and what my understanding is and the people I've dealt with is that in Europe, comics are treated more like an art form, which is beautiful because I think in Australia, we suffer from, again, that legacy of the nerd, you know, the image of that little, you know, spotty, dorky kid who doesn't have any friends, but
yeah.
I find it to be completely opposite in Europe. It seems to be that you're treated more like it's treated more like an art form. I recently was teaching in at a campus in Hamburg called Hall HAW, and I really found that to be the case. You know, it was a lot more respect for the medium, and so I'm extremely excited about the French release. Yeah, it's out now. I just haven't seen it yet.
Mm. No, I mean, I think we've had other people on, and they've very much compared. I mean, Australia's smaller kind of almost boutique industry at the moment is very much the stuff that we're putting out is very much more towards that artistic.
Sorry. I think I know what you mean. Yeah, I would say 100% that there's a big chunk of us leaning that way, but there's also a big chunk of us still leaning towards that American culture. But I see a lot of fantastic indie titles and indie developers in Australia. Like, for me, it's like even Perth's starting to feel like a bit of a Seattle here. You know, we've had Ash Wood come out of here. We've had Temple Smith come out of here. And some of my favourite comic artists are in Australia. You know, like Bobby N. I absolutely love his work. He's fantastic. You know, it's so I think the people that I like and the culture of comic creators that I like, I really am seeing more of a European influence. I think that's something I've always tried to whisper in the ear of Wolfgang anyway, since day dot. I've sort of whispered, you know, keep it European feeling. We don't need anything to copy America, as you know, anymore. It's keep it, you know, a nice European vibe. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly enough American comics out there.
Exactly.
The where we left off with Changing Ways Volume 2 with a little bit of a cliffhanger. So, are there any hints that we can get for what's going to happen coming up on the third volume?
Yes, I will give you the biggest exclusive of your life. My publisher doesn't even know this yet.
I'll make sure I'm recording. All right.
we had a big chat about book 3, and look, one of my strengths and weaknesses since I've been writing myself is I like to get a little bit too bombastic with my storytelling, and I don't mean to do it to be David Lynch or anything. Like I genuinely just like nice weird stories that if you dig a little bit deeper, you'll find out some answers. So We had a look at what was planned for book 3, and we've slowed down most of that content and probably going to put it into book 4. Book 3 is going to cover almost 100% exclusively the journey of Lucy Barrett. Yeah. In case you didn't know, isn't dead.
Well, that's kind of where we left off. For those of you who haven't read book 2, that's kind of where we leave off finding.
Yeah, I mean, there's hints, and I never outright say that she's dead, apart from it's suggested. It's talked about in book 2, everyone kind of assumes she is.
Yes.
But no, not so much. So I really wanted something big's happening, a big event's coming, and the way I'd structured book 3, I don't know, I was scared I was going to lose some people by feeding them too much too quickly. So what I've decided to do is tell you what happened to Lucy, and when book 3 ends, it'll bring everyone right into fruition to the same point in time. So we'll know exactly where everyone is, and we'll have the Barrett family ready for a big ride. That's not to say that they'll meet each other or anything like that, but you're going to follow a very interesting journey with Lucy, because that poor woman, tell you what, she goes through quite a hell of a ride.
Definitely looking forward to that, but you've kind of answered a little bit of my next question, which was going to be book 3 is obviously bringing you to that magical trilogy point, and I was going to ask if you got any more planned, and you've already said book 4. Is this something that you've now, given your initial feelings about getting bored drawing the same thing over and over again, is this now something you plan to have Changing Ways going on for quite some time, or have you got an end point in sight?
I've got a 6-book agreement with the publisher, but I've also got an agreement that I will stop illustrating after the third book.
Okay.
So this third book with Lucy will be the last that I illustrate. I will continue. I'll definitely be continuing to write them, because I've pretty much written book 4 now anyway. But we're on the hunt at the moment for a new artist, for someone to take the reins for the next 3 titles, for issues 4 to 6.
Is it difficult to give up your baby that way?
When it's been, when you've been holding it in your arms for this long, yeah, it's time to put it down and let it go. I've got two or three other stories I'm desperate to get onto. And the illustration part just takes up a lot of time. Mm. I'd really like to illustrate some other stories that I've got in my head. That I've got a children's book I'm planning. And yeah, I know I had a kid, so ooh, look what happened. You wrote a children's book. it happens, you know. But I've got a story I really like, and I just want to move on and start flexing my illustration style a little bit more. And I don't really want to do that. I don't want to tamper with changing ways visually too much. I want the changeover visually to be a bigger, like just a big solid chunk, like boom, here we are, it's drawn by someone else now, but the story is still the same. So by taking you away from David and Jesse and a few of those other characters for a whole chapter, a whole graphic novel, I'm hoping the impact of seeing them drawn slightly differently in a different technique won't be as, you know, negative, too much of a negative for readers. But yeah, we're on the hunt. There is actually a local guy. There's one local guy who I want to ask, and my publisher's keen for me to ask him, but we haven't asked him yet. And he's actually one of my graduating students, and he has no idea that I'm going to ask him. And if he says he can't do it, he can't do it. But and we've got a couple of people in the UK that we're looking at as well.
It's I mean, you know, I think in a lot of ways, I guess that means your series has made it when it's gotten to a point where other people can take it and run with it. You know,
I hope so. Well, they haven't done it yet, and it's hard to people that are that will dedicate that kind of time. If we have trouble getting an live, nah, we won't have trouble. We'll get someone. So I guess yeah, that does mean it must have been fairly successful. Yeah.
Just in terms of some of the other stuff you're working on, and I understand you probably can't talk too much about it, but are you looking to continue on, apart from the children's book, are you looking to continue on in a similar genre, or have you got other areas that you'd like to expand into?
I'll probably always do... I think I'm moving more into psychedelic suspense horror. Psychedelic thriller horror? Is that a thing? I don't know.
I really hope it is, if it's not.
Yeah. No. Expect to see from me psychedelic thriller horrors. Yeah. I've got a story that... How do I explain it? I've got a story that I'd explain... It's like The Shining on a cruise ship with children. That should be a fun one.
I love it already. You've already sold one copy based on that description.
So stories like that I really want to get into. And above all, triumph of the human condition. You know, I like to see what the human spirit is capable of, and I like happy endings. You know, I really, really do. I don't like throwing horror into stories for the sake of horror. I'm not a big fan of gore. I'm actually quite a sensitive, nice, happy person. But I like to see someone come out of the other end and really strive and fight for family and loved ones. You know, they're the sort of stories I think, whether it's horror or sci-fi or, you know, anyone can really get into. If, you know, everyone has family and friends that they love, and, you know, we like to see, you know, them triumph and fight for each other.
Well, that's the thing I've always found about horror films, that people don't... People always get down on horror films saying that they're horrible and they you know, promote violence, but I've always found that there's this beautiful moment of renewal at the end of every horror film where someone finally makes it out the end of the yes. The other side.
Well, yeah, they're the good ones. Like,
the good ones, you know, that's not all of them, yeah.
You can have films like High Tension, which are very visually aggressive, but they still have that triumph at the end, or even the opposite. You can have film. One of my favourite films, which is very controversial to watch, is a film called Martyrs, and that's extremely confrontational, but not in the normal ways that people make films confrontational. And it still manages to somehow have this weird uplifting feel. Oh, I think it did. I don't know. I couldn't even talk about that movie for the first 3 days until I'd sort of let it sink in. And that's a tough one to even... Have you seen Martyrs?
I haven't actually seen Martyrs, no.
Oh, I don't even know if I should recommend it, but it's bloody fantastic. It's a really good... I think it's French, but it's extremely confronting. It doesn't... Yeah, it's not in the normal, cheap, confronting ways, but, yeah, that's a doozy. I think someone uploaded the free copy on YouTube anyway.
I will endeavour to check it out, but I'll make sure I do it during the day then. The work that you mentioned at Curtin as well, I mean, you've got your full-time lecture there, you said, and does that, you know, have you found now that your comic success has sort of moved on, is there a point you imagine where you'll give up one or the other, or do you always want to work in tandem with the two of them?
I will, God, this is like an exclusive interview of exclusiveness. I will 100% be leaving the university at some stage. That you can guarantee, and I'll be moving to Melbourne.
Oh, wow.
And working full-time in comics.
Now, Melbourne seems to be where it's at the moment.
Yeah, I just love the city. It's got nothing to... It's not as... Look, I've got some great friends over there, people that are in the industry that I really, really love. It's much easier to get to conventions. Mm. But I just love that city, man. Melbourne's just beautiful. So I can give you 100% guarantee that I'll be moving to Melbourne and leaving Curtin eventually. I'm not quite sure when. But yeah, full-time comics and graphic novels will definitely be where you'll see me. And in a few, 10 years' time, if that's not the case, you can make fun of me over another interview.
Look, I love Melbourne myself, and I'll be down there in a few weeks for the Oz Comic Con, of course.
Excellent, yes.
Which is you'll be at Supernova this weekend.
Yes.
And you'll be Supernova Perth, of course, and you'll be at Oz Comic Con Melbourne in a few weeks. Just over a week now.
Unfortunately, I can only be at Supernova for Saturday. I've got to fly to Mauritius for work for a week, right. And then as soon as I land back, I'm off to Melbourne for Comic Con. So, unfortunately, I won't be there on Sunday for Supernova.
Well, that's a shame. I mean, so if people are keen to see you, they should get there early and get in to have a chat with you, and they should certainly check out your book. But one of the things I wanted to ask you about conventions generally is, I mean, what have you found when you go to those? Do you find that conventions here, and I don't know if you've been to a lot of international ones as well.
Yeah, I've done San Diego Comic Con 3 times, but that's the only international one.
Right, yeah, I'm doing New York for the first time in October.
Oh,
so.
Nice! Yes, that's more. See, the good one thing about the New York one is it's still about comics more, you know what I mean? The San Diego convention has become very movies and, you know, but the New York one still seems to be more, you know, focused on comics like the name suggests.
Yeah. Well, do you find when you meet fans directly or you meet other artists directly, has that given you a different perspective on your work as a result of that? Or what do you find you get out of conventions?
Both of those things, yeah. You meet some cool artists that you get really inspired and motivated by. Sometimes I guess you'll meet some that are... Can I swear on this or not?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay, cool. So you'll find some dickheads, you'll meet some dickheads, but that's pretty rare. I think most people who are guests at conventions, you know, are nice people, and most fans are fantastic. I've had a couple of weird experiences with fans, but they just make good stories, you know. I love having people come in and get their photo taken in booths and stuff. Or you know what? You know, I love the most if someone talks to me about the story and picks up on a clue. Like, picks up on something that another reader hasn't noticed in the story. Like, I love that. That's really exciting. Like, if they ask something like that, I noticed so-and-so, how come? And that's the stuff I like to prep for. Like, I really like filling in all the holes. Like, I used to like David Lynch a lot more than I do now. Like, Lost Highway was one of my favourite films, and I worked out what that film was about from beginning to end. I nailed it. And then someone pointed out to me that, you know, I think he just puts a few wild herrings in there and then just to throw you off course. And it really bothered me. And it was like the ending of Lost. That bothered me. So I hate having loose ends. So there's a lot of loose ends appear in Changing Ways at the moment. But that's the great thing by book four, at least. They're going to be wrapped up. I can't remember what the question was.
I think you've answered it anyway. So, look, Justin, thank you so much for your time joining us on Behind the Panels. And I wish you the best of luck. And we will definitely catch up with you in the future.
Thanks, Richard. I'll see you probably in Melbourne, yeah, at Comic-Con.
Definitely. Okay.
Cool.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
You too, buddy.
And that was Justin Randall, author of Changing Ways, Book 1 and 2. And as we learned in an exclusive scoop during that interview, Books 3 and 4 shortly on their way. We need to thank Justin, of course, for his time. You can see Justin at Oz Comic Con in Melbourne. You can also find him online at justinrandall.com and find out some more about that really complicated process of making the artwork at changingwaysbook.com. Of course, you can also buy tickets to Oz Comic Con at ozcomiccon.com. You can find everything you need to know about us at behindthepanels.net, and you can also subscribe to us on iTunes. Just look for Behind the Panels. We hope to hear from you again soon. Hazard Spot.